Welcome to Today's Issues. Join us for the next hour as we offer a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Ed Vitagliano.
And welcome to Today's Issues. It is Monday, August 17th. The year is disappearing through our hands like sand through an hourglass. It's Fred Jackson is politely laughing at my joke. Wasn't that...
What a confession. You watch the soap operas.
Listen, I do not watch soap operas. I'm at work during the day. I will say this. I will make this one confession. When my wife and I were first married, our first year of marriage, I was at my last year of Bible college. We were in California. I went to school full-time, worked part-time. My wife worked full-time, and she would come back to the apartment for lunch. And so we would usually put these little chicken pot pies in, and we were broke. I think you could get those for 25 cents a piece, or these little enchiladas, frozen enchiladas, 25 cents a piece, whatever. And we would sit down, and sometimes we would watch television in the living room, and there were only three channels. There was news. My wife had no interest in that. There was a Twilight Zone, which gave her nightmares. And then there was All My Children. So I always mocked soap operas. So we started watching that. And it was after a month, I told her, we got to quit. I'm getting hooked on this because you just get sucked in to these stories. And so I haven't watched a soap opera since then. I will say that. Fred Jackson, news director at American Family News. Good morning, Fred.
Good to be with you. Such an exciting day.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes.
This is nuts, all the stuff we're going to be talking about. Chris Woodward, news reporter for OneNewsNow.com. I'm sitting in, by the way, for Tim. Mm-hmm. So I'm in the captain's chair. Fred is sitting in for me.
Yes.
And then Chris Woodward sitting in for you, Fred.
I'll tell you what.
Studio Venus.
Yes.
Chris, how are you doing this morning?
I'm doing well. I got to tell you, when my wife and I were first married, we would go to Dairy Queen and get ice cream and then book it home so that way we could watch The Biggest Loser while we ate ice cream.
The Biggest Loser.
Which is the exact opposite of what they were trying to convey with that show, but
yes,
I digress.
That's right. All right, Chris, kick us off. Nothing's going on today, at least in the Democratic world, is it?
No, slow. I mean, it was painful to come up with these topics. It's something you're going to hear a lot about today, due in part because the media loves this guy. The Democratic National Convention kicks off today. It's going to be four days of speeches, all of it virtually, meaning Biden's going to be in his basement or people are going to be in their homes and things like that and appearing via Zoom meetings and things like that electronically to talk about Joe Biden, why they say he's awesome and he's the right pick for the country to be president. There's going to be a lot of people speaking today, including independent senator and former presidential candidate Bernie Sanders, as well as former Republican governor of Ohio John Kasich, and then former First Lady Michelle Obama is going to be the keynote speaker tonight. Do you guys expect this to just be the love fest that many people already assume it's going to be?
Oh, I'm sure it'll be a love fest.
Yeah.
I mean, first of all, they're not going to invite anyone who's going to say something bad about Joe Biden. Fred, now you were talking about the coverage tonight because this is all virtual, right?
It's all virtual. And so the major networks, what's going to happen is the Democratic Party, the DNC, is going to put together a package of all the different speeches. So and they're going to offer that up to a 2-hour package each night, starting tonight, running through Thursday. And networks such as MSNBC, CNN, and PBS, they're going to run the full 2 hours of this package that we're being given by the DNC. And that starts at 9:00 Eastern time. Now, ABC, CBS, NBC, and Fox News are only going to run 1 hour of that starting at 10:00 Eastern time. I said to Ed to you before we went on the air, there'll be more people watching the Stanley Cup playoffs tonight than there will this convention. This is going to be boring TV. You know, you've got somebody sitting in their living room or their kitchen or their basement giving a speech.
Right.
Now, if you want to talk about, you know, anybody sitting anywhere and just talking for 20 minutes, that's bad TV.
Yes.
That's basically what you're taught when you go to broadcast school. You got to have changing pictures.
Yes.
This is going to be awful.
Because under normal circumstances, when you have normal conventions,
mm-hmm. yeah.
the media will, all these stations you're talking about, CNN, mm-hmm. NBC, whatever, they can shift the camera angle
yeah.
on the speaker,
yeah.
on the people sitting behind the speaker, the people in the crowds. You're constantly yeah. changing the picture to keep
you're
the viewer engaged.
You're interviewing the crowd members,
absolutely.
All of that sort of thing.
You know, but this is basically for those who have, for the last 5 months or so, been trying to get used to Zoom meetings. This is going to be a Zoom meeting on TV yeah. of one person.
Uh-huh.
Now, Chris, let me ask you this. Is this going to be hosted? Are there going to be any live people? I know they were originally supposed to be in Milwaukee, mm-hmm. or is this completely virtual? In other words, is Joe Biden going to still be in his basement in Maryland of his house, or are they going to be in Milwaukee with 100 people?
Yeah, I think I don't know the exact answer, but somebody obviously is going to be the person, kind of the pitch man, directing people, the audience, if you will, on where things are going to be going. We have already gotten a lot of reaction from people about this event kicking off today. One of those people is former House Speaker Newt Gingrich. He was on Fox and Friends this morning, and Mr. Gingrich is of the opinion that this is about the height of popularity for the Biden-Harris campaign, and things are about to start going downhill. Clip 4.
This will be the high watermark before the collapse of the Biden-Harris ticket, which I think will collapse, and probably by Election Day will resemble George McGovern in 1972.
Really?
You know, Rasmussen just came out and said 55% of the country does not think Biden will complete his first term, which means people are going to be looking at Harris as a president, not a mm-hmm. vice president. At the same time, 39% of the country, according to Rasmussen, thinks that Biden has significant cognitive problems.
Now, I was not alive when McGovern, that whole situation went down in the 70s. And I think maybe things might be different this time around, just given the fact that we have more news channels. Most of them are a Democratic super PAC for liberals. Do you think that's a fair? What do you remember about the McGovern situation?
George McGovern ran against Reagan. Didn't he run against Reagan or George McGovern?
72.
That's Nixon. I'm mm-hmm. sorry. Ran yeah. against Nixon and got clobbered. It was one of the biggest defeats ever, and until Reagan and
Mondale,
who beat Mondale, mm-hmm. and then the Massachusetts governor. The Massachusetts governor
Dukakis.
Dukakis. Thank you.
Fun name to say on the radio.
Yes. And I'm sorry.
Reagan B. Carter.
That was George H.W. Bush mm. beat Dukakis. Mm-hmm. So all right, I'm sorry. Monday morning glitches.
No,
going
yeah,
on.
But you're right. Reagan did take Mondale to the woodshed. There's actually a famous quote. I don't remember who said this, but you know, Mondale only won Minnesota, and some Reagan staffer was quoted as saying, "We got robbed in Minnesota." So,
and he was from. Mondale was correct. from Minnesota.
Had a female vice presidential candidate.
Geraldine Ferraro. Mm-hmm. See, I did. She's Italian. So I did. Well, she was married to an Italian at least. So, mm-hmm. All right. So I get my brain back on track. Yeah. I don't know that it's going to be as bad an election as Nixon McGovern in 72 in terms of a collapse. Fred, you have any idea why the former speaker is talking about that kind of, I guess the statistics he's pointing to, that by Election Day, most people will think that Joe Biden is not fit for president. I guess that's his point.
Well, you know, the American people are not stupid. What we've already witnessed with Joe Biden is he rarely emerges from his basement. All right. So do you want...
You think they know that? Or you think...
I think they are able to observe. Do you really want the next president of the United States to be a guy who hides out because of the pandemic? Or do you want somebody like Donald Trump who's out there every
right.
day? I don't think the American people are really as stupid as some people think they are, you know, as some politicians do, because Biden doesn't take any questions from reporters.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He just walks into a room. He reads a teleprompter. Every now and then he might take a question. He has a little list of reporters that he refers to, usually the hometown reporter from Wilmington, Delaware.
Yeah.
You know, he goes to these high schools in his town. So, I mean, how do you generate excitement in the electorate when all you see this guy is stroll into a high school gymnasium, make a little speech, and leave?
Yeah.
So, I think as far as Kamala Harris goes, the more the American public learns about her. I mean, we even had this on the day she was chosen last week. You had this independent group who said she is to the left of Bernie Sanders.
Right.
She's to the left.
Is that even possible?
Of Bernie Sanders.
A socialist? the left of a socialist.
A self-described Democratic socialist.
Right.
So she is to the left of that individual. So the fact that, you know, the media and the DNC have tried to make big that she is the first black female to be on a ticket, I don't think that even that is resonating with the American public, because they're going to look at what they have planned. I mean, we've already seen Joe Biden's platform. He's put it out there.
Right.
I mean, and Kamala Harris is even to the left of Joe Biden. I mean, she's all for ending fracking,
right,
for instance. And they want to raise taxes. I mean, they want to raise $4 trillion in taxes. So they want to do away with all the tax breaks that President Trump has given the American people.
Right.
So when that kind of thing goes out, add to that the violence that we are seeing in the streets of Democrat-controlled cities. We'll talk about this a little bit later. What happened in Portland last night? The 81st night of violence in Portland, Oregon.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about an incident that occurred there.
Well, and let me just say this too, Chris, and then chime in if you'd like. But in talking about the convention this week, again, it starts today, ends Thursday with the nomination of the Biden, Kamala Harris ticket. I think she may get nominated officially on Wednesday. But here's Nancy Pelosi has kind of thrown a wet blanket on the convention. I mean, you talk about it already being boring. Now it could be overshadowed by Nancy Pelosi calling the House back so they can talk about the Postal Service, and we can talk about that later. But you have a lot of things that are going to overshadow this convention. President Trump is going to be on the warpath, so to speak, this week. And he's going to be drawing a lot of the air out of the room. So this could be a real dud when it comes to the Democratic convention this week.
Yeah, and speaking of President Trump, he's hitting the campaign trail today. He's going to be in Mankato, Minnesota, campaigning for votes there. And then he's going to do another appearance, I believe, later today, maybe early tomorrow, in Oshkosh, Wisconsin. Wisconsin being where they were going to do the DNC convention. Other stops include Scranton, Pennsylvania. That's where Senator Vice President Joe Biden was born. Then he's going to appear in Yuma, Arizona later this week. So he's not sitting at home in the Oval Office or the basement of the White House. He's hitting the campaign trail as well. And the president did take a moment today on Fox and Friends to talk about the fact that Joe Biden rarely, if ever, comes out of his basement, and he never really takes questions. Clip one.
He doesn't come out because he can't. He doesn't take any questions from reporters. I keep saying to my people, you know, here I am getting bombs thrown at me every day by people that are totally, you know, frankly dishonest reporters. But I'm getting, you know, they're espousing the view of the radical left. But here I am, bombs every day, and do a good job in handling it. That's why my polls have gone up 10 or 12 points. I don't believe they were ever there, by the way. I think they're phony polls. I think they're suppression polls.
One of those polls, guys, happens to be a CNN poll, which they even reported on today, talking about how Biden's lead was diminishing and has been for a few weeks, although NBC and Wall Street Journal have a poll that says, you know, Biden is still doing well. So we'll see. A poll is a poll is a poll. If you've ever heard me on AFR Talk, I'm generally skeptical of any poll, but I will do my job as a news reporter and tell you what polls say.
Well, and Donald Trump, I think we've said this before, Donald Trump really is a just such a unique personality and a unique political figure that he kind of defies traditional polling. Yeah. I mean, that happened in 2016, mm-hmm. but you have the factor, you have to factor in the fact that there are a lot of people who do not want to say, yeah, I'm voting for Trump, mm-hmm. because they're afraid of the blowback, because the left is completely unhinged. And so so Trump is just one of those strange political figures that may completely defy normal polling. You know, going back to Joe Biden, he was on a radio interview, I think, again, not a major news source. He certainly didn't sit down with Chris Wallace for an hour like mm-hmm. the president did. Mm-hmm. But he was on a radio talk show with a minor talk show host. I'd never heard of her. He couldn't even remember the number of grandchildren he had. And the video playback, I think, had been edited several times. So they must have done it to make Vice President Biden look better. Now, listen, I just forgot about Nixon Mondale in 1972. So I understand a glitch or two. But then again, I'm not running for president.
Right.
But that is, I think, what's going to continue to happen. You know, maybe it will be a collapse.
Yeah.
You know, by the time the election gets around, I don't know. I tend to think, as Tim says, that there is probably at least 25-30% of the voting, the electorate, that are solid secular progressives, quote unquote progressives, that would vote for a ham sandwich if it was on the Democratic ticket. So,
is it Black Forest or Honey Baked? You're going to lose me on one of those.
Baked is part of the equation when it comes to Joe Biden. So
Fred's the Canadian bacon guy. We like American bacon here.
That's right. All right, now, what other news we got?
Well, I do want to play this real quick because we're talking about Biden and, you know, stammering and things like that. Steve found this this portion today, and I want to make sure we get it in there. President Trump, speaking on Fox and Friends again, he said that if Biden can do things unassisted, like walk off the stage, the press are going to call it the greatest debating candidate in history. Clip 8.
We can see that Joe doesn't want to debate. But here's the story. If Joe makes it through the debate, I think they're an hour and a half, and I said only standing, you have to stand. But if Joe makes it through the debate, the news, not you people, let's see, the three of you, yeah, I'm pretty sure you'll call it straight. But the news will say it was the greatest performance in the history of debating. He was brilliant. He was unbelievable. Joe Biden, all he has to do is, if he can make it off the stage and walk back unassisted, they will say it was the single greatest debate performance in history. You know that, and so do I.
Marco Rubio did refer to the media as a Democratic super PAC in 2016. He got a ton of applause for saying as much. It was during a debate. And granted, Rubio was trying to beat the other people he was running against for the GOP presidential nomination. But we all know what the media does and how they act. They put Obama on a pedestal. Biden was a member of the Obama administration. They seem to think he's hunky-dory. So I think the president, who is trying to beat Biden in this contest, probably has a valid point there.
Well, they certainly, Fred, have talked up Kamala Harris. Mm-hmm. And most of the news media calling her a moderate.
Yeah.
You know that. So I fully agree with President Trump. This is fake news.
Yep.
And they are, you know, to Chris's point or Marco Rubio's point, much of the media is a Democratic super PAC. So
no question about it. And again, I believe the media has overplayed their hand.
Yeah.
They really have. They've become unhinged against Donald Trump. I mean, the words that they use to describe him, he is in their minds, he is their Satan.
Yes.
That's what it comes down to. And they're not hiding their bias anymore. CNN has lost it as a news agency. They've totally lost it. The Associated Press, quite frankly, isn't much better in their political coverage. That's where they are, the mainstream media, the ABC, CBS, NBC.
And Washington Post.
Washington Post. That is why, and there were ratings that came out last week, Fox now has Fox News in the evening. Laura Ingraham.
Sean Hannity.
That block of time.
Tucker Carlson's very popular.
Prime time in the evening. They have bigger audiences than ABC, CBS, and NBC.
Mm-hmm. So combined?
It's beyond cable now. It's even the major networks.
Right.
And that there's a reason for that, because more and more people are flocking to Fox News, because at least at Fox News, you will have the opposing side.
Right.
They'll have Democrats in. You know, Donna Brazile works now for,
right.
for
sure.
Trump. She's a so they have Democrats that they have in. On the other networks, the odd Republican will show up, like a Mitt Romney, who they know doesn't like Trump anyway.
Yeah, that is an odd Republican.
That is an odd, like John Kasich speaking tonight. Give me
yes.
a break. I mean, again, the American people are a whole lot smarter than what these networks, the DNC, gives them credit for.
Well, all right, Chris, what else we got?
Well, something else I think a lot of people are paying attention to, and we'll see if it impacts Democrats running for office, not just Joe Biden and Kamala Harris, but others this November, is all the violent protests. And one place in our country that has been just a hotbed for violence has been Portland. I mean, we're talking about weeks of unrest, months really, of unrest, and things certainly didn't get any better. Though violence erupted last night, blocks from a federal courthouse. And a guy was literally beaten by a mob. The video's all over Twitter today. It's very troubling to watch. If you are faint of heart, you might want to avoid doing that. But I bring this up because all of this comes after some comments from Representative Ayanna Pressley. That's the representative from Massachusetts. She's a member of the squad. She supported Elizabeth Warren for president. But Ayanna Pressley, she called for unrest in the streets this weekend over Trump-allied positions ignoring America's concerns. And I have some sound here, clip 5.
You know, this is as much about public outcry and organizing and mobilizing and applying pressure so that this GOP-led Senate and that these governors that continue to carry water for this administration, putting the American peoples in harm's way, turning a deaf ear to the needs of our families and our communities, hold them accountable. Make the phone call, send the email, show up. You know, there needs to be unrest in the streets for as long as there's unrest in our lives. And unfortunately, there's plenty to go around.
Yeah, that's, listen, that's doublespeak, where she's saying one thing, but we're clearly, Fred, seeing another. So mm-hmm. she talks about people being put in harm's way.
Mm-hmm.
Well, how is that not the what we see in Portland, for example, or in Chicago with the shootings, mm-hmm. just, you know, out through the roof. At Seattle, all the kinds of... Now, I did not watch the video. I purposely just avoided this video you're talking about, Chris. But I read about it, and this was apparently some guy in a pickup truck with somebody else.
Yeah.
And they were being stopped by the crowd. Then they tried to get away, and then they crashed. And then this guy, the driver, was pulled out and beaten. And he tried to leave, and would they say, you can't go, bro. Mm-hmm. And they just continued to beat this guy. And he wasn't trying to run anybody over. He's trying to get away.
Mm-hmm.
How does Ayanna Pressley not see that that is putting people in danger? In these communities,
yeah.
A lot of the people are terrified.
Yes.
In Portland, they had, I forget how many, it was in the 60s, the number of calls to 911.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then the police didn't answer.
Yeah. I think to answer your first question, Representative Pressley subscribes to the... denial way of life that we've already seen from people like Jerry Nadler. Remember, he said Antifa doesn't exist.
Right.
It's a myth.
It's a myth.
I mean, she, you know, if you hang out in circles where you only talk about this and that and you don't pay any attention to it, she probably doesn't even know what's going on.
Yeah, I think she does. I think they're just ignoring that because in their minds, that unrest she's talking about is what's necessary mm-hmm. to overthrow an illegitimate government. And I think that's the way they view President Trump and his administration. These are Marxists, and that's the way they view the Trump administration. And frankly, in my belief, that's the way they view the Constitution mm-hmm. as something to be overthrown. And the only way you can do it is by unrest. All right, folks, we're going to take a quick break. Ed Vitagliano, Fred Jackson, Chris Woodward will return after that break, and we'll continue discussing the news both here and abroad. You're listening to American Family Radio.
On the next Today's Issues, we'll talk with Dr. Frank Turek.
And remember, these texts were authored in different places. To invent Jesus would have required genius beyond genius. It seems to be more of a miracle if this could have happened by this scrambler process or telephone game process.
We'll also have news headlines and analysis from American Family News. Don't miss the next Today's Issues, weekday mornings at 11 Eastern, 10 Central on American Family Radio.
Have you ever wanted to walk where Jesus walked? That's right, Israel, the Holy Land. That's where we're going in March 2021. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. We have set our dates for our trip, March 16th through the 24th, and we'd love to have you join us for this, for many people, once-in-a-lifetime trip to the Holy Land. For more information, just visit the website, twholyland.com. twholyland.com. If you want a brochure sent to your home, we can do that. You need to call 800-FAMILIES, 800-FAMILIES, option 5, and leave us your name and your address, and we'll get that brochure in the mail to you. Again, it's going to be a wonderful time with Christian brothers and sisters from around the country as we go and see Israel.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
My name is Dr. Andrew Fabich, and I teach microbiology here at Drew McCollum University. And so instead of trying to teach biology from this perspective that gives you this goo-to-you version of evolution, you get this perspective of this is who God is, this is who God has revealed himself to be, and he's revealed himself in nature, which is terribly exciting to study.
Hi, Todd Starnes here. Truett offers biblically-centered degree programs. Check out truett.edu/starnes. Loretta Lynn, the coal miner's daughter, says country music is dead. The country music legend mourned the passing of the musical genre during a podcast interview with Martina McBride. It's true that country music has been overrun by woke leftists. I wrote a chapter about the demise of country music in my new book, Culture Jihad, How to Stop the Left from Killing a Nation. Country music, at its heart, is a uniquely American musical tradition rooted in heartbreak and hope, faith, and family. But in recent years, cultural progressives have invaded Music City. I write in my book about how the head of the Country Music Association Foundation hated Governor Mike Huckabee. The executive, who's a gay married man, said country music has no place for people like Huckabee, a kind-hearted, church-going lover of music. You know, it's sad to say, but Loretta Lynn is right. Country music is deader than a possum trying to cross a Mississippi highway. I'm Todd Starnes.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
And welcome back, folks. Ed Vitagliano sitting in for Tim Wildman today, joined by Fred Jackson and Chris Woodward. Chris, what's next on your list of happy news for us to talk about?
Well, we were talking about this in the previous segment briefly, but House Speaker Nancy Pelosi wants members of the House to come back and vote on some things that she says would stop the Trump administration from making devastating changes at the Postal Service. To fill people in, the new Postmaster General, who is a businessman and a former Republican financier, he's put in place of this by President Trump himself. He's made some kind of cost-cutting changes in the last few weeks at the U.S. Postal Service, and Democrats, all of which are in favor of mail-in balloting because of COVID-19, quote-unquote, are basically accusing the Trump administration of trying to rig the election. They're saying that these devastating cost-cutting changes are going to delay mail and not allow you to be able to vote by mail and things like that. So Nancy Pelosi herself is trying to bring members of the House back to vote against things. And in all fairness, there are some Republicans that have expressed concerns over what's going on. But I bring this up because in a very recent appearance on Sandy Rios in the Morning on AFR Talk, attorney Hans von Spakovsky, formerly of the Justice Department, now with the Heritage Foundation, said the Postal Service has a history of messing up mail-in ballots, and any concerns about recently enacted changes is laughable. Clip 6.
The Postal Service has been having problems delivering absentee ballots for years, even just this year. remember, the Wisconsin primary was April 7th. The District of Columbia and Maryland primaries were beginning of June. The New York primary was the end of June. And there have been reports coming out of all of those states about big problems caused by the fact that the Postal Service did not deliver absentee ballots to many voters, and to other voters, they delivered them too late to be counted.
Now, Nancy Pelosi, trying to get ahead of this and make it a story of her own, she said in a statement yesterday that the, quote, lives, livelihoods, and the life of our American democracy are under threat from President Trump.
You know, there's a lot of misinformation. Frankly, I will admit this is a confusing issue to me. Not the thing about the mail-in ballots. I think I understand why that can be problematic. But this thing with the post office, there's just been a lot of misinformation. I saw over the weekend people were tweeting out pictures of mailboxes that were locked.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, these public mailboxes, you know, everyone knows the big blue ones. You open the slot, you throw your mail in, you close the lid. And these were locked. And this was being tweeted out saying, this is President Trump doing this. This is meant to threaten our democracy. Mm-hmm. He's trying to prevent mail-in voting. Well, the truth of the matter is, as people began to investigate these tweets, were retweeting the accusation, and then side by side had news stories from like 3 or 4 years ago where the post office was locking these boxes because thieves were breaking in and were opening them up and stealing mail. So these mailboxes were in tough neighborhoods, and people were stealing stuff from them, so they locked them down. Has nothing at all to do, Fred, with this current discussion about mail-in voting or the U.S. Postal Service. So there is a ton of misinformation out there, and it's no wonder a lot of people are wondering what's going on.
Yeah, and very deliberate misinformation that is taking place out there. The big picture, I think, in all of this is that the Democratic Party believes that if they can push the nation towards more mail-in ballots, that that gives them an opportunity, a greater opportunity, to win the election. It is ridiculous. I mean, the post office, number one, is saying in some states like New Jersey, Nevada, it's going to take, it may be days after election day before we get these ballots in, and then days that it takes. And this is the kind of thing that the president is worried about. Election night comes, and you're going to have states that say, well, we mailed out 80,000 ballots out there, and we only got 10,000 back in.
Right.
So we have to wait. Going to wait 2 weeks? 3 weeks, a month. This is the kind of uncertainty that the president is very concerned about. Not to mention the fact that, as he said on Fox and Friends this morning, I mean, he says ballots are being mailed out to people's dogs,
right,
to people who have been dead for 20 years.
Or who have moved.
Yes. He is not buying the urgency that the Democratic Party is trying to portray to the American nation, that because of the pandemic, people are afraid to leave their houses, to right. go to a polling station, to vote. You know, it, in connection with this, it was very interesting last week where we had Pastor McCoy on.
Yes.
Rob McCoy.
Yeah.
God is at God Speaks Calvary Chapel in
yes.
Ventura County. And now he said, and I had not heard this before, the reason that the Democrat-led state of California is pushing for schools not to open, is pushing for churches to be shut down, is those are two primary places where people go to vote.
Right.
All right? You stop and think about that. Now, I don't want to go too far down the road of conspiracy, but could it be that there is at least an element of truth in that the more ballots that are mailed out, the potential for fraud, let's put it that way,
right,
potential for fraud increases dramatically. How do you check the validity of a ballot that comes in 3 days after the election and it has somebody's name on it? How do you check whether that person is eligible to vote?
Mm-hmm.
How do you do that?
Yeah.
Well, I can
ahead,
give
Chris.
You one answer. I talked with a guy named Paul Guppy from the Washington Policy Center. This was a couple of months ago. Washington State went mail-in balloting a long time ago, long before other people did, or at least they offered the option. And Mr. Guppy told me that there is basically someone that is in charge of looking at the signature of somebody at the bottom of the mail-in ballot and then looking at a computer screen to determine whether that signature on a piece of paper matches the electronic signature on the computer screen. And that person goes, okay, this is a valid ballot. And then they count it that way.
Listen, this is nuts. You talk about conspiracy theory. Okay, so I'm going to give mine. Okay. Now, first of all, let me just say that Anthony Fauci, who's kind of heading up the president's task force on the pandemic, has said that in-person election voting with distancing and masks is safe. Mm-hmm. So there is nothing dangerous about going to your normal polling area and pulling the lever. My opinion is that those on the left do not want to have to rely on voter turnout to the polls to unseat Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. They got beat by the enthusiasm and energy of the president in 2016 turnout. They realize that they probably can't match that kind of enthusiasm here in 2020. You've got a non-exciting candidate in Joe Biden. All the other question marks, turnout is going to be low. Mm-hmm. So they are taking advantage of whatever they can. You remember the 2018, the ballot harvesting.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so what they do is, people who ordinarily would not bother to vote, they go find them. And who knows what's being passed along? Mm-hmm. Whether it's a carton of cigarettes or a $20 bill, I don't know. But if you can register today, same day registering, mm-hmm. registration, here's your ballot. You fill it out, mm-hmm. we'll turn it in for you. Mm-hmm. Mail-in balloting, I think, is the same thing. They want to, because they cannot get everybody to the polls that they think will vote Democrat, they want to increase those numbers, and they understand, I think, that the fraud is going to benefit their candidate. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no question about it. No question about it. I think, you know, this Nancy Pelosi, as Chris has mentioned, is calling the House back mm-hmm. for this week. She wants a hearing, too. They want a hearing. Because they believe the man that President Trump appointed to run the post office basically is in cahoots with Donald Trump.
Yeah, she wants the Postmaster General to testify.
And what Trump is saying is that he brought a businessman in to run the post office because the post office is billions of dollars in the red.
Right. Yeah.
And one of the things he said this morning is, the post office needs to ask Amazon for more money because the post office delivers a lot of Amazon products.
Sure. Right.
And they say Amazon can afford that. You know, the president also this morning on Fox and Friends said, listen, we voted in this country in the midst of World War II. Surely we can do this.
Yeah.
The reasoning is people are still going to grocery stores.
Right.
Still going to Walmart to buy whatever. Surely you can go out for a few minutes and stand in line somewhere and vote.
6 feet apart with masks. I'm okay with that.
Yeah, go to it.
Well, and to build off Fred's point there, if it's okay to protest in the street, if it's okay to riot, and it's okay to loot, and in Ayanna Pressley's case, have unrest in the streets, you can vote in a building with other people around you.
Well, was it, Chris, was it you telling me this morning, maybe Fred, I don't remember, somebody told me this morning, that Republicans in the House and probably the Senate, they do want to increase funding for the post office, but they want, or maybe the president, they want a standalone bill. Mm-hmm. We want to fund the post office, increase the amount of money that they get, but that's it. Mm-hmm. And what Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats want to do is they want to throw a bunch of stuff in there, mm-hmm. other goodies, mm-hmm. So that if Republicans vote against it, they say, aha, see, they want to produce fraud in the election by not funding the post office, or if they're afraid to vote against the bill, they're forced to vote for the post office bill with all the goodies thrown in.
Correct. Mm-hmm. I was not the individual to say that, but there are Republicans in favor of funding and doing, their own pieces of legislation over this.
Yeah.
For sure.
Well, that's not just Democrats who do that in Washington, D.C. Republicans do it too. Mm-hmm. I have always been against that. In my opinion, they ought to change the way business is done in D.C. You should have standalone bills. You don't throw funding for the military into a post office bill.
Yeah.
so that people are afraid to vote against it on its face, because then when they run for re-election, you voted against the raise for members of the military. Well, you know what? It had nothing to do with the post office bill.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the way an awful lot of pork gets thrown into legislation.
That is for sure.
And yeah,
all right. That's the kind of thing the American people are fed up with.
Yes.
Both parties.
I'm fed up. I know that.
I'm right, tarred. Chris. I'm so fed up, I'm tarred.
You're tarred. I know.
I am. Yeah. Now, putting on my sports hat here, I want to mention this because I know you guys are big hockey fans, and I defer to you on anything hockey.
Hey, Chris, let me just stop you right there,
okay,
because Tim's not here. Fred and I are sitting in News Central, today's issue Central. Fred, we could talk about whatever we wanted. All right, we're not going to turn the conversation to
hockey. How about
those
hockey. Blackhawks, huh?
Yeah, Blackhawks stayed alive. Yeah. The Bruins play tonight, which is the only reason why I won't be watching the Democratic National.
Well, see, and this brings me to the point that I think is worth bringing up. Yes, it's a sports story, and not everybody's a fan of this league or that league or this sport or whatnot, but I think it proves that in the NHL's case, in the NBA starting postseason, you've got the MLB still chugging along, even with some teams like Miami and St. Louis being way behind in terms of games played because both of those franchises had COVID problems. It proves that things can exist and that things can continue in the age of COVID-19. Maybe if we do the masks and washing of hands and things like that, things do not need to shut down completely. And I think the sports leagues are kind of proof that if we take precautions and we do this and that under the advice of various people, including Fauci and other experts, we can do things. We don't have to stay at home, clenching our pillows, waiting for everything to go away.
Well, I will say this. Now, I think the NBA is the same way, but hockey has two bubble cities, Toronto and Edmonton.
Yeah.
The Eastern Conference is in Toronto. The Western Conference is in Edmonton. And what they're doing is that all the players, almost like the Olympics, all the players are staying in one place, no family. Now, that is taking a toll. Our goalie for the Bruins, hours before their game this past weekend, Saturday, he quit.
Yep.
Yeah, and he went home. He said, I'm tired of being away from my family. If you go all the way to the Stanley Cup Finals, you're talking about October. So that is a long time to be away from family members. Military, of course, they do it all the time. But so there is a price that's being paid for those who are in these bubble cities. And I don't think baseball is doing that, right? They're just doing it regular. They travel by
plane.
Yeah,
they do travel. Now, they have some really the MLB commissioner recently announced, hey, you guys really got to step it up in terms of precautions and things like that, because some players were going to establishments that some adult men choose to go to on their own free time and were therefore coming into contact with people that may or may not have COVID. That was one of the reasons why.
Or other things.
Yeah. Yeah. Frankly. Well, that's. Yes. By the way, I appreciate the fact that you said our goalie. I thought I was the only sports fan that used the word our. Like I'm on the team, I'm on the payroll. Like, you know.
Listen, when people say that in comments, they go, oh, what do you mean our team? Yeah. You don't play. Yeah, I watch it, and I consider it my team.
That's right.
And you don't like it, too bad.
Yeah, there's a big thing with college football right now with some conferences still trying to have a season, and a lot of the people behind it are using the hashtag, we want to play. And, you know, you'll have, like, you know, Joe Sixpack, you know, Monday morning quarterback, we want to play. Like, I didn't realize you were on the team.
You don't look like you play football.
Man, I make Rudy look tall.
From the movie.
I'm below 5 feet nothing. So
I do miss, you know, watching hockey right now. I do miss the crowds.
Oh my goodness.
You know, being there. Now the NHL has done a really good job of decorating the arena.
Yes.
There in Edmonton and in Toronto. But I do miss the crowd, and I know locally they've been talking about football and they're going to allow, what is it, 2 fans per player?
In Mississippi, that is the current plan, yes.
And 2 fans
at high school
player?
Sports.
High school sports. So I thought, you know, they could do that for the NHL during the regular season. I mean, they're committed to doing what they're doing right now. But surely an arena that sits 20,000 people.
Yes.
Surely you could put 5,000 in the lower bowl.
Yeah.
So you could have some real cheering instead of a button being played with a crowd cheering, you know, when
right.
something
yeah,
happens.
It's kind of crazy.
It is kind of crazy. So I just think, I hope there is going to be an adjustment in all of this as we roll along, because I think having sports back, and I'm not as big a football fan as a lot of my colleagues here, but I understand that the energy that comes, it's part of having a good time in America,
right,
is going to these sporting events. And in the fall, I mean, college football is huge.
Yeah. Oh, man.
It is absolutely huge.
There are some towns, some cities that basically survive because of the college
sure.
football season.
You take,
in terms of
you
their
take,
local
take
economy.
Alabama, you know, Tuscaloosa. Yeah. What is it? The stadium sits, Chris, 100,000?
100,000 plus, yes, sir.
Surely.
Yeah.
Surely you could put 20,000 people in there and have the – you could have 10 feet between them.
Yeah.
You know, and in order for that to –
in terms of spacing.
In terms of spacing for that to happen.
Yeah.
And take their temperature if you want to before you go in.
Right.
But surely we can get some degree of normalness in here.
Well, you know, this really has been – I know we're not the only ones to talk about this, but this year, 2020, this has been the twilight zone.
Yeah.
For a lot of people, because there is still no real end in sight for a lot of these. You know, what's going on in California regarding churches.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of things happening, a lot of questions being raised, a lot of division. Mm-hmm. My goodness, a lot of people divided over the whole coronavirus pandemic and masks and whatnot. It will be good to get back to normal. I don't know whether 2021 will bring us a normal year or not, but it sure would be nice. So.
Yeah. Hey, talking about Tuscaloosa real quick, a few days ago, this was a quote from Mayor Walt Maddox there in Tuscaloosa. He told reporters, actually this is back in June, but he told reporters in June that the city of Tuscaloosa, Alabama, would lose up to $2 billion,
mm-hmm.
billion with a B, if the University of Alabama's football team is canceled.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that.
There's
believe
no
that.
Way you can make up that kind of money. I mean, think of all the other things that your city will not be able to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, this has really been a catastrophe for economies around the world. It's not just the United States. The coronavirus has been catastrophic. And anyway, so people ought to be praying. My wife and I, when we pray for cures. I know some people get upset when I mention the V word, vaccines.
Mm-hmm.
Please don't email me. Mm-hmm. But we're praying for the virus to mutate, become less lethal, less dangerous. Anything that we can think of that God could cause to happen, so that this would be turned away. So anyway. All right, what else we got?
Well, speaking of prayer, I think it would be good for us to pray for our brothers and sisters in Christ that are trying really hard to have indoor worship services. California tends to get a lot of this attention because there's all kinds of congregations up and down the Golden State that are working to try to have indoor or maybe outdoor services, things of that nature. Certainly a situation that is fresh on most everybody's mind is the situation involving Pastor John MacArthur and Grace Community Church there in the L.A. County area. There was some good news on Friday that came out where a judge there in the L.A. County area had said, the judge had agreed with Pastor MacArthur's argument that church is essential and these people should be able to meet for indoor services if folks can go to Walmart or the liquor store, things of that nature. And then, in a decision on Saturday, the California Court of Appeal set aside that ruling and said, no, you can't have indoor services. But, as was already expected, Pastor MacArthur and Grace Community Church had services again yesterday. Mm-hmm. Pastor MacArthur is quoted as saying, we're in church because our Lord commands it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Friday ruling initially was treated as good news. Mm-hmm. We talked about it in our story meeting. The judge did put a lot of stipulations on churches meeting inside, mm-hmm. to the mm-hmm. point where I think they even said you had to have someone from the local health department present to monitor what was happening. That was disturbing enough. Now this judge comes and says, no, you can't meet inside. You can meet outside. This is what's happening in California. Fred, get your take on this. This is incredibly important. Because I think this may be a court battle that goes all the way to the top. The U.S. Supreme Court already ruled in favor of Nevada against a church.
Yes.
So we may be looking at another situation in which the government tells people they can't meet, and then when they do, because I don't think John MacArthur is the kind of person who's going to buckle.
Mm-hmm.
Then what do? You send the police in, you shut off their water and their power, and what happens if they meet anyway? You're going to write tickets out for everyone whose car is parked in? This could get ugly.
Well, I have to wonder whether even liberal Democrats want the scene on TV of people being taken out of church services in handcuffs and hauled away.
Yeah.
Do they really want that? Do they really want in California a scene where Pastor John MacArthur is put in handcuffs and taken away?
Right.
Do you want that kind of thing in America? Because that is so China.
Yes.
Quite frankly. That is being punished, as Chris and so many others have noted. At the same time, you have thousands of people going into a Walmart or a Sam's or a Costco or whatever the case
is. Or protesting in the streets.
Who is stopping the thousands every night in Portland, Oregon?
Right.
They go out, and if you watch any video, not the horrible one from last night, but watch any video of these protests, they're not practicing 6 feet apart.
Right.
And most of them don't have masks on.
Yeah, you would think their cases would be going up through the roof, and their governor would be having press conferences every day like a lot of governors across the U.S.
Yes.
Well, frankly, I think that that this is coming from the Marxist left, which you don't have to technically be a Marxist to be one of these secular progressives. Again, air quotes on progressives. But you act the same as a Marxist, and so I just call it the Marxist left. Mm-hmm. I think they despise religion in general, but specifically Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
They despise the people who participate in Christianity, i.e. go to church, and all of this because they hate God.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is coming out. And the drift, even of the Supreme Court over the last 100 years, to where the Supreme Court would rule against that church in Nevada and would probably rule against Grace Community Church in California if this makes it all the way to the top court. This is a sign of a real threat to the First Amendment. And I don't think this is hyperbole. I think this is really where we are and where we're going. And it is not a bed of roses. Christians are going to have to make up their mind just how Christian they're willing to be.
Yes.
And that is the issue. We have to remind people, early on, Pastor John MacArthur was willing to go along with the restrictions.
Flatten the curve.
He was willing to do that. But then he saw the contradictions.
Yes.
He saw the crowds in the street and the governor's not doing anything. And he saw, you know, people going to Walmart, all of these sorts of things. And then, well, how can you then say to churches, you can't do what these protesters are doing?
Right.
Gathering. And I watched John MacArthur's service yesterday. Mm-hmm. The whole thing was an incredible service. And he says, we're called upon to worship as Christians.
Together. Right.
We are called upon to do that. And we have a state that's telling us we can't do what other people are doing in the street.
Right.
Gathering together. You're telling us because we're a church, we can't do that. And you want a health department official here taking temperatures of people?
Yes.
Going in?
That is communist China.
Yeah, it is.
That kind of oversight.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And now, folks, let me just say this. We're coming up on our top of the hour break. Let me just say this. If you and your church leaders, your pastor and your church leaders, believe you should not meet and do it via Zoom or whatever, that's your decision. But if John MacArthur and his elders believe they should meet, that's their decision.
And people voluntarily show up for service.
People voluntarily show up. Our opinion here, basically, here at AFA, is it is church leadership who makes the call, not the government.
Yes.
And I think that's what John MacArthur believes. All right, we are going to take a 5-minute break for news. When we come back, Steve Jordahl will be in the batter's cage. We'll have more. You're listening to Today's Issues on American Family Radio.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.